Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices. The wrong advices. Advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio, presented by Naps Gear. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and with me today is prep coach Dave Kalik. He's a prep coach and a bodybuilder. We've had him on an Advices Radio show before, which was PED After Hours with Taylor. Dave, thanks for being here. I got to tell you, man, that episode got a ton of downloads, a lot of really great information on it, and I'm really glad to have you back.
Thanks, Scott. It's good to be on. Thank you.
So how's your day going? I know you're over there in Southern California. You're in LA. You're basically kind of like in the heart of what we would call like the bodybuilding mecca.
Yeah, I'm about maybe 30 minutes from Gold's in Venice. You know, I live near downtown. So, you know, pretty well centrally located near all the freeways and stuff. So location's good. Come down to Gold's a couple times a week. You know, just train and meet clients.
Nice.
So it's kind of cool.
That's got to be fun, man. I'd only been out there one time, but I could tell you that lifestyle, just I could see it. I could see what the allure is. I know that there's a lot of guys that are kind of going, you know, east towards New York. And, you know, we've got our little subculture cliques that are kind of migrating all over the country. But if I had my choice, I'd definitely be there hanging in Los Angeles. That place seems pretty awesome, man.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some, there's other, like, quote-unquote meccas, you know, like, C. Weinberger's gym is incredible, and, you know, there's, I guess, yeah, Gold's is definitely special. You know, you can go in there, and you see Charles Glass, and you see, you know, Sean and Dexter, and it's still very much a mecca in that regard, you know. There's still a lot of good competitors that are training, and it's kind of cool because I have a lot of clients who will come into town, and so I can, you know, make adjustments and see them in person, because a lot of times, you know, pictures don't do justice. So it's really cool when someone's flying into town, if they're getting ready for a show or it's off season, and, you know, it's great to come in and, like, first it was a little overwhelming, you know, because it's a mecca, but
yeah,
it's just great to be able to do that and to go there and meet people, you know, to train people there and do adjustments, and so it's cool.
And
speaking of Charles, it's kind of cool because we're working together on this guy, this light heavyweight he's doing in the USA.
Okay.
So it's just kind of cool. We do these little projects sometimes. We've worked together, like when he was training Stan McQuay and I would do his nutrition, and, you know.
No
so
kidding.
Cool projects together.
Man, that's got to be awesome. And speaking of Stan, you're his coach, right? He lives, if I recall, he lives out in that area too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he lives in the Valley. Like, for example, like, I check on him. He's getting ready for the Chicago Pro right now. So for example, like, he lives in Chatsworth, you know, in the Valley. So I'll go there once a week. Usually I'll put him through back or legs, but
nice.
You know, for me to, again, see him in person, make adjustments. The show is July 1st, you know, July 4th weekend. So yeah, he's in the Valley area. So he's like a half an hour away. So again, I go there once a week, you know, check on him and stuff, but, yeah, he's coming along really well.
Nice. So I've always, you know, I've always heard that the quote unquote California pro doesn't train hard. I have a feeling that doesn't apply to Stan though.
No, Stan does train hard. You know, it's funny. It's sometimes you hear that guys in California don't train hard. And it's funny because sometimes, you know, you speak to a client and they're like, yeah, come over here and, like, you know, kill me, put me through legs, you know, whatever you got to do. And, like, sometimes they come over here and, like, holy shit, you know, people throwing up in the garbage can and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, there's definitely, I mean, I grew up back east where there's definitely, like, a certain, like, mindset of training, you know what I mean? It's just, like, shut up and squat, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess basically, like, you know, you come out here, you're going to train hard. So, no, Stan does train very, very hard. And, I mean, it's incredible, actually, the strength he has for his body weight. You know, it's just in there. He's barely, you know, he's got to make, well, now they give us 5 more pounds in the classic division IFBB. So before, you know, he'd have come down to 175 is fucking murder.
Mm,
you know? So we have, Yeah. So, I mean, he looks like he's made out of cement when he puts down there, but it's a painful process, you know? And, so we're kind of cool that we have like this 5 pounds of extra leeway to play with in the division this year.
Nice. So, yeah. I saw him out here in Detroit when he won the 212. Were you coaching him at that time?
Yes, I've been coaching him since he got his pro card. So we have a win in Jacksonville. That was actually when the class was the 202 class before they switched it to 212.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
So it's funny because Stan actually won the very first 202 division. This is in 2009. This is Jacksonville. You know, this is Dexter Jackson's show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he went, it was like a year later, and then he went to Olympia the first time, and then he did Detroit. He won Detroit in 2010, went to that Olympia. Then we won the Sacramento 2011, another Olympia trip. 2012 he took off, actually 2013 took off, and then 2014 we did the Arnold, you know, the very first 212 Arnold.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went into the classic division, and as you know, people know, last year in Salt Lake City in April, he qualified there for Olympia, and then September was his fourth Olympia trip.
Yeah, so, he's got a physique. I feel like he embodies what a classic physique really could be. I think he's got really cool shape. But speaking of wins, congratulations with Dorian Haywood. That's pretty awesome, man.
Oh, yeah, thanks. It was really cool because we started working together in August of last year, right after he did North Americans, and. He was a little frustrated. I guess he finished like 11th there. He was in the heavyweights. He was like 212 pounds.
And how tall is he?
I'd say he's 5'8 and a half.
Okay.
Exactly, pretty much. So we had right away, we launched into a really good productive offseason. And he, you know, he did the USA as a super heavyweight. He got second to Rashid. I remember, he was just a freak.
Oh, yeah.
And then we North Americans. And we got third there, and then we just kept pushing it to nationals. We're like, fuck it, we're just a couple months away. And, he got it there. And actually, now we're having a really good offseason, which will translate into prep, because he's going to do his IFBB, his first show, his debut at the Tampa Pro, which will be the week after the USA.
Nice.
So it's going to be kind of cool. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, man.
He's come along really well. I'm amazed, like... Shit, he put on a lot of muscle last year. He's really, like, volumizing now really nicely, and I think, you know, should go really well. So, it's kind of cool. He's excited. We're excited for his pro show.
Yeah, as a coach, man, that's got to be one of the coolest feelings in the world to have somebody, any of these guys, be so successful and to be the best they can.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was just really cool, especially because, you know, to see, like, because, you know, it was four shows last year. He had to qualify or re-qualify for... you know, for the USA, like 3 weeks before that, then it was the USA and then North Americans in August. And then we pushed through to November. So I give him credit, man. That was a pretty brutal year of prep, and, it came to fruition. He won, and just, yeah, it's a great feeling. Just no doubt. It's probably the best feeling.
Yeah. No, it's so. Kind of like what we do it for, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's when you see, your guys doing well, you know, in the overall, it is a great feeling, and it's why you do it for. And I mean, it's not just wins. I mean, if seeing people just improve from,
yes,
to me honestly, like, more so than the winning, it's just seeing people progress from show to show, like, you know, following through the game, you know, following through with it, seeing things come to fruition. And again, because ultimately it's improvement. It's based on improvement.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely.
So it's not just about the wins. It's about sometimes, I mean, people just have, I mean, some people know that a pro card is not in the cards, no pun intended, you know?
Sure,
and
sure.
So therefore, sometimes just seeing someone like, fuck, just coming out of nowhere and just, you know, winning a local show or just improving. It's not even winning. It's just getting a complete physique change is great. I mean, some of the fun people are people who are not even... like competitors. Like, I work with some people who are just like diabetic. I work with some cancer patients, you know what I mean? And so these individual stuff is really cool. Just seeing, like, if someone loses a bunch of weight and they were like very heavy before, you know what I mean? And they're falling through with meal patterns and they're losing weight and they're seeing it. It's exciting.
Yeah. Know?
sometimes it's even more exciting sometimes than a competitor, because that's a lot of times that's stressful. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's it's really awesome, man. And it's great to have you here. I appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody else does too, because there's a lot of people out there that I feel, and I know, you know, are lacking education, and that they want to do everything they can. But at the end of the day, if you don't have the right tools, the right knowledge and know-how, I mean, we both know that you could really spin your wheels for a long time and not make any progress. I think that education is just so important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like you see a lot of things here. You know, like, for example, you know, genetics. We're going to talk about genetics are obviously the most important role. You know, your genetic predisposition will determine, you know, basically the outcome. But, you know, you'll see guys who are genetically gifted who really just don't put in the work that's needed. Maybe perhaps they rest on the laurels of their genetics. And you'll see someone who has not nearly that kind of genetics, but fucking bust their fucking ass. I mean, they're relentlessly nailing the foods, the train, you know what I mean? And they work hard and they place, you know, and they, so you see that a lot, you know what I mean? The knowledge. So, I mean, and then, you know, you need, you know, there's some people who just don't have everything set nutritionally. Maybe they're training correctly. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of variables. And I think a lot of what's going on in the sport sometimes, I guess if you want to call it, some of the pet peeves that I see are like people, like there's a lot of people who are just don't understand like the suffering it takes to really get contest ready. There's like, you know what I mean? There's lean, like, whoa, you know, there's ripped. And then there's like, I mean, we're talking shredded, you know, if you want to get shredded to the bone, striated glutes, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
People, it's going to take work and suffering. It's almost like, you know, I don't have the expression, like, people want to be a gangster until they have to do gangster things. It's like, people talk about, oh, man, I'm going to get this pro car, whatever, and, like, you know, then they go up there, and they're not, they think, okay, they see some veins in their arms, okay, I'm ready, you know what I mean? And then, you know, I guess, sorry to skip around a lot, but it's you know, you'll see it like at the weigh-ins at the USA or Nationals, North Americans, you see these guys who, you know, they qualify for Nationals somewhere in the country and they have their homeboys and they're, you know, oh man, you're going to get that fucking pro car.
Sure.
And, you know, they're hashtagging, gunning for that, literally, IFBB.
Yeah.
Gunning for that pro car, whatever. And it's kind of funny because, you know, we go to the weigh-ins and you see these guys, they go there, the guys who have been on social media, like, I'm going to kill, you know, that whole thing. And it's funny, they're like potato bumping their boys, you know, giving the girls a hug, and then they go into the weigh-ins, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're sitting there, we're waiting for our competitors to come out, hey, did you make weight, blah, blah, blah. And these guys will come out, and they have that deer in the headlights look, like, oh my God, what the fuck did I get myself into? Because, you know, they're online here at Nationals, you know, and they're seeing guys stripped down with, like, striated glutes, and, like, you know, and they're like, what the fuck? You know,
freaks
and
then of it's nature. Funny,
exactly. And these guys will come out, and you'll see they're like, the whole body language has changed. Like, you know, they're looking down and they're like, come on, let's get out of here. So the girl's like, and you see this over and over again. So I think a lot of times there's a lot of reality checks. And, you know, some people will even say, like, online, like, wow, this person's going to get served some humble pie, you know? And so I think people need to sometimes, you know, be patient and, you know, pick your battles and be strategic. You know what I mean? If you, you know, it's the saying, national qualified doesn't mean you're really qualified. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you really want to be, I think there's a lot of delusional stuff, and I think people need to be more patient. And again, you know, going back to the work ethic, I mean, it's like, I think even Shelby had said something last week in a statement, you know, it's like getting, this is not easy fucking work to suffer to get down and get that kind of conditioning.
Yeah.
And people don't understand, like, there's conditioning and there's conditioning. Okay, like, you know, you see there's a lot of guys who go, let's to the USA Nationals, whatever, and you see these guys, the guys are walking around huge, you know, the sweatpants, and they're walking around, you know, and usually it's the guy you see in the corner that's all skeletal looking. It's all like sitting there all covered up, not looking big in the clothes. And when that shit comes off, it's like, what the fuck, you know, because that person worked for it. You know, they put in all the work and everything. And, you know, then you see these guys who, you know, they're on the last call outs because, you know, this conditioning, these guys, these judges, I mean, they're looking for conditioning first at these shows, and then they'll work on, you know, size, shape, symmetry, and stuff like that. And that's just the way it is.
Sure. And I think,
so if you're going to do this,
I was going to say that I think that sometimes what I've noticed, at least, with somebody who isn't as experienced, they think that they're in shape. And I've heard you talk about this before. One of the issues that a lot of us have, especially those of us that don't have the best genetics, you know, we could get lean. I could get my abs to look totally awesome. You know, my legs right. will be covered in veins, but that doesn't mean that your lower back is tight. And, you know, speaking of Shelby, I've heard him say, and I've heard others say too, that you are only as lean as your fattest body part.
That's exactly right. To be honest, sometimes sometimes you'll hear, like, I'm sure you've heard it too, if you're working with someone, oh man, I'm losing size, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, send some pictures. Yeah. It's like sometimes I'll just look right away from the back, glutes and hams, okay? And it's like, yeah. Guess what? If you're so fat on your glutes and hams or lower back, you're not losing muscle. You're losing weight that needs to come off. You know what I mean? So, and it's exactly, like, there's lean and ripped. And then there's, like, honestly, sometimes there's, like, you think you're, like, you know, like, you see, and this goes back to, this is kind of skipping around again, but you know how the off-season abuse of pounding high sugary, high dense saturated fat foods and the pounding of the insulin and pounding of the androgens, and you're seeing these guys having a difficult time getting in shape. You know, you'll see, like, you know, these guys, I've talked about it before, you know, the guys taking, you know, the 3 grams a week of tests and the gram a week of trend and the gram of EQ and all this stuff, and these androgens, you know, the trend doesn't normatize, but the other stuff, the high amounts of tests and everything, these guys are getting that deep, stubborn, visceral fat from that shit.
Hmm.
Because, you know, fucking estradiol is so high, you know what I mean? And losing the effectiveness of being on, you know, anti-aromatase drugs and, you know, having to take more, you know, so by the time it gets on to show, you see these guys, they lose the sub-Q fat. So they have all the, you know, the surface vascularity and stuff like that.
Sure.
And they look and their friends say, whoa, man, you look crazy already. And it's like, no. You know, if you don't lose all that deep fat, you know, you're not going to get the kind of separation, you know, you're just not going to have it. So and I think that's where people, yeah.
Let me ask you this. So as a coach, then you've got a client, let's say, you know, hamstrings aren't quite in yet. Glutes aren't quite in yet. What's the answer then? We just keep dieting you know, everybody wants to stay as big as they can, but I guess that means they're going to lose some size. You just have to keep, is that your answer? You just keep pushing stuff in?
Yeah. Well, you want to keep pushing, but the point is that it's not pushing to, like, where you're banging your head against the wall. There's got to be, you know, if things are stubborn, then foods have to be rotated. You know, you have to look at, you know, how you're doing your cardio, the timing of your cardio, you know, what are the food, you know, so I guess it's not so much, I mean, to me, I think it's really, people don't understand that. I think when you're dieting and you're losing fat and water, to be honest with you, it's really hard that you're going to lose muscle tissue. Okay. Cause you know, you're like, you know, some of these guys will say, oh man, I lost so much size, blah, blah, blah. And then they get to the show and then 3 days later, you know, the fucking 40 pounds heavier and like, boom, you know, it's like that muscle didn't go anywhere. It's just re-volumized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's, people understand it's really hard to actually lose muscle, like raw tissue.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
You might be flat, you might be coming down, but as far as losing the tissue, honestly, look, let's face it. I mean, if you're eating 500 grams of protein a day, you're using progressive weight resistance on your muscle, and there's all these androgens, you're not going to lose fucking muscle. Okay, you might lose volume of muscle because, yeah, you're like, you know, to get shredded, you know, you can't be full and jacked. I mean, you're going to have periods where you're flat, and that's just the reality of it.
Sure.
And I think when people are getting quote unquote flat, I think that's when they think that they're losing muscle, but they're really just getting in shape. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I think when you see someone like if their lower back, I mean, first of all, let's look at things. Let's look at, you know, maybe some people have horrible glucose intolerance, you know, so sometimes, I mean, like everyone's different. I mean, I find that, you know, you want to be adaptative with clients. You know, there's some people who, for example, thrive on keto. You know what I mean? There's some people who thrive on, you know, let's say what I call a gluconeogenesis pattern where like proteins are really high and there's fats there. It's not true keto because you're getting, you know, gluconeogenesis from high protein counts, but some people fare well that way. Some people fare on carb cycling. You know, some people need partition foods, like, you know, fats, proteins, and carbs combined together. Like Stan McQuay, I'll give you an example. When he was doing 212, I mean, the fucking guy, I had him eating, his metabolism is so fast and he processes through food so fast that, you know, he was eating like the way a super heavyweight would eat. I mean, really, you know what I mean? And some people who, Yeah, I mean, it's so unique. I mean, people are, you know, people, you have to really, like, see. I mean, people have different digestive rates and everything like that. And, you know, I mean, some people can assimilate different amounts of protein, and some people need high protein counts, and some people fare on, some people just have a hard time. Some people have bile issues, and they have a hard time, you know, breaking down fats. I mean, there's a lot of variables that you want to keep in mind, and nothing is engraved in stone, you know?
How would you tell, for instance, say, as a coach, if how would you determine, say, that somebody didn't tolerate fats well, for instance?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I bring it up because that's actually rare.
Yeah?
That's actually rare. I mean, for the most part, I see people having problems tolerating carbs.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I have keto people, you know, there's like carb cycling and stuff, but I just think for the most part, especially when someone comes aboard and they've had a history of, again, you know, in the off season, just pounding this relentless amount of fucking shit food, making a post about it on Facebook, you know, gunning for those gains with the Z, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all about the glorious house of gains, as Robert, who's that guy who makes those videos. That's awesome. But what I'm trying to say is that people are just like, sometimes, like, you know, these posts of, like, you know, the millions of pancakes and all that stuff. I mean, to me, I think in the off season, you're just going to wreck your insulin sensitivity, you know? And it's not just, by the way, it's not just the sugars. It's people don't understand that when you have like those fried saturated fats, you know, that shit affects blood sugars. That affects your glucose intolerance levels as well. So it's all that shit, pounding it, the pounding of insulin that some of these guys do in the off season, you know, I mean, it's, and then it comes down to prep and you have horrible insulin sensitivity, and you got to sometimes do drastic things. And so I think a lot of times the success of pre-contest is dictated by what you do in the off season.
Sure. Sure.
It really is. You know what I mean? And it's like, I guess I'm not a meet your macros kind of, like, to me, a gram of protein is not a gram. It's not a gram of protein. You know I mean? If you say, okay, this person's diet is 400 grams of protein, and you say, oh, it's easier just to drink, you know, whey isolate and egg whites, you know what? They're going to look like mush.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like one aspect of protein. I think that proteins have different digestive rates, different assimilation rates, different amino acid profiles and stuff like that.
Now, so, this is something that I found very interesting about you. Everything that I've heard, and I have heard you talk about this in the past, you like to pick from different amino acid sources, even sometimes within the same meal. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, for example, like, well, I like to mix protein sometimes. I mean, sometimes you'll see chicken and fish in the same meal. Sometimes the ratio of fish will be higher than the chicken. You know what I mean? I like to combine proteins, maybe, you know, salmon and chicken. I like to do varieties of proteins and rotations because I think, well, I mean, I think the body becomes adaptive. And I think with that, this is my opinion, we have, again, different digestive rates to play with. And I think you can kind of turn on metabolism mechanisms, buttons, by using different proteins and combinations. And I just see really good results that way. It's not always. I mean, a lot of times I just have people on straight proteins, you know, but sometimes if things are stagnant, whatever, I might mix them up.
And,
you know?
And I'm guessing that as a coach, what you're probably seeing, what I'm guessing you're seeing is that when you say that this kind of sparks something metabolically, what are you looking for? You're seeing then hunger
example,
for it? Like, are you seeing hunger, for instance? Like, you know, you start changing things up and then all of a sudden a guy who hasn't been hungry for 2 weeks, it starts clicking on and now he's anticipating
his
meals?
Right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. So when someone's prepping and I'm hearing, oh, I'm not hungry for the next meal, I'm like, you know, struggling with the food. It's like, I'll rotate the foods, same amount of calories, but I'll rotate stuff around. And a couple of days later, yeah, I am getting hungry for the next meal, you know, and then things start accelerating. And then God forbid we can actually, you know, I'm kind of big sometimes, you know, when the person's coming down and getting leaner, you know, to actually, you know, increase calories. So that's in a really great scenario. We want the metabolism to be really like moving along. I want the person hungry for the next meal, where they could just mow through the meal. You know, that's indicative of good metabolic efficiency, I think, is when you know, it's great when someone's on prep, not great for them, but what's music to my ears is when someone's on prep and they eat a meal, 45 minutes are starving.
Yeah.
That means things are moving along really well. Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess we'll rotate foods to get that effect, you know?
That makes sense. So what do you see out of, say, fish, for instance, versus chicken versus beef?
I don't know. I guess, you know, like you took it like it whitefish. I mean, I guess, you know, you are what you are. Look at these foods as tools. So I guess, you know, fish seems to like accelerate, like to break down really quickly and accelerate, you know, chicken seems more, if you want to label it more like a mid-range density protein.
Yeah.
You know, like grass-fed beef and salmon are very similar. As far as like, you know, well, there's a lot of omega-3 there in that density. So I guess I just sometimes, you know, and then you look at egg whites and, you know, whey isolate being really quick and let's say hydrolyzed whey being the fastest, you know what I mean? So, you know, just to time things, you know, keep in mind about digestive rates again. I mean, I've been guilty sometimes of pushing too much food. You know, you have like, for example, the concept of when people say, oh, I'm going to train legs. So now before legs, I'm going to eat this big fucking steak and potatoes, you know, like, so I can be strong during legs.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's like, I mean, being realistic, you know, that's, you know, there's digestive rates. There's, that's not, that steak is not going to get in you to make you stronger for your leg workout. If anything, you're going to have this heavy shit sitting in your stomach. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
you want to be aware. You want to be aware of food timing and all that. And, yeah, you just got to see.
Well, I'm sure it varies then. On average, how long would you suggest somebody waits after eating before they train? And like I said, I know that this varies, but we do have some newer people that are listening to this, and they might not understand this concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, again, some people, like, you know, like, there's a person who has, like, that wicked metabolism, and we all know them, you know, the 190-pounder that eats, like, a 250-pounder and
yes,
just doesn't even gain. Like, you know, so those kind of people, I'm not saying those people should have a steak before they train because it's so, like, you know, they're not going to absorb all those nutrients. But, I mean, right, you got to time it. I mean, the thing is like this is that you don't want to be stuffed going into the workout.
Hmm.
You know, at the same time, you don't want to eat so far out where you're having, like, you know, a blood sugar drop in the middle of the workout either.
Yeah.
You know? So you want to time things. And, again, I think a lot of it is, you know, you want to make sure, like, blood sugar is nice and stable going into the workout. You know, God forbid that there's some post-workout insulin or something like that. You know, you want to be, I think, blood sugar stable going into it. So you, and again, you know, you want to have, the idea is you want to have enough energy to train hard. And I think a lot of people, you know, their timing of their foods, you really, I guess it's a very good question. You know what I mean? How long? I mean, some people can eat and 45 minutes later, they feel they have enough gastrointestinal clearing where they can go in and train. And there's some people who have to wait longer, an hour and a half, 90 minutes.
Okay. I mean,
so you got to play around. Sometimes you could do, let's say, a heavier meal. I'm saying red meat, but
yeah,
you know, a heavier meal further out or a lighter meal closer to the gate. You know what I mean? Again, these are things you have to play around with. And of course, you know, off-season pre-contest changes a lot of things, what we're doing with, you know, calories and total amounts of food and everything.
That makes sense. You, mm-hmm, you mentioned blood sugar a couple times there and not wanting a crash. Back when you did PED after hours, you were talking to Taylor about pre-workout insulin, and you said you weren't a fan. Has that changed, or is that still your stance that you would prefer to use it?
I mean, for the most part,
another
I guess,
time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I would like to definitely talk about insulin just separately. I guess what the problem I have with the pre-workout insulin, I mean, I've seen some people do very well on it. I'm just saying, for the most part,
yeah.
I think the idea of taking a shot of insulin before you train, you know, having to have a ton of intra-workout, you know, heavy-ass carbs. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, there's some fantastic intra-workout stuff.
Yeah.
You know, with carbs and stuff like that. I just mean, as far as like the heavy insulin going into the workout, to me, fuck, if you're fighting off blood sugar and you're going hypo during workout, trying to chase carbs so your blood sugar is moderately stable while you're training, to me, that's not conducive to, I mean, you're going to have cortisol issues, I think, if you're going to have all these blood sugar issues while you're training, you know, trying to offset going hypo, whatever. So to me, I think that's really so much of that. If you have all this shit sitting in your stomach when you're training, I just, you know, I guess I'm just more into if there is going to be insulin used, because not everyone's a candidate for insulin either. I mean, there's some people with horrible insulin sensitivity, and then the insulin is just fucking completely counterproductive, you know, like those individuals. But I mean, if the individual, if we're working with insulin, I mean, I've done some pre-workout insulin depending on the person, but I mean, for the most part, I like the post-workout window period.
You had mentioned too before the show, another one of your pet peeves was guys that are running just exorbitant amounts of gear. And I've heard you talk about this on other shows too, and that there's almost a point where you've seen like counterproductive effects by taking too much.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like this, some of these guys that used, like, for example, like, they'll take, they're on maintenance test.
Yeah.
And they'll have an estradiol reading of like 35, you know, with those kind of people taking a huge amount of tests. I mean, it's just, it's going to be counterproductive. The huge, again, you know what I mean? The androgen abuse that you see, I just see these guys are just not getting in the crisp shape. That you see when people are just using, like, I just, to me, you know, the 3 grams of test, you know, we've heard about these cycles people doing.
Yeah.
You know, 3 grams of test, a gram of DECA, or, you know, a gram of EQ, gram of Tren. I just think, you know, you get these crazy high estradiol levels from all these androgens, not the Tren, because that doesn't aromatize, but I mean, the huge amounts of tests and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, it's only speculative, you know, who knows, you know, it seems like maybe Tren can indirectly have an influence maybe on estrogenic activity indirectly, you know, then you have all these huge amounts of tests and all that stuff. And I think that you're seeing, like, you know, the inability to really, like, to get shredded and to harden up with that abuse, you know, and I think you're just going to get hit panic and renal stress, you know, especially there's a lot of orals involved. You're going to just, you know, and all that. I mean, I think it's really counterproductive. And then when you throw in all the insulin abuse with it, you know, again, incredible loss of insulin sensitivity with all that huge amounts of tests, you see all those, the heavy visceral pockets of fat that are stubborn because of that during dieting.
I see.
And I just think it's counterproductive. I mean, there's only just people's blood pressure going up like crazy. And you'll see these guys walking around that are just, you can tell they're just on so much fucking shit. You know, beet red.
Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind, I think a lot of the side effects that people are having from gear is, you know, it's the high level, it's the blood pressure that goes through the roof.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's where we always hear about the kidney issues, and that's pretty much what that stems from, isn't it?
It is. Like, see, like, the steroids don't have a direct effect on the kidneys. There is a direct effect because the blood pressure that goes up, you know, there's renal stress from the high blood pressure.
Okay.
I mean, that's how you, I mean, let's think about that. When diabetics have really high blood pressure, I mean, that's how they're losing kidney function, you know, I mean, it's all in one and the same.
So I imagine it's got to be frustrating as a coach then at times, you know, especially at your level, I'm sure you've encountered guys that are taking like super, super high doses.
Yeah. It is frustrating.
So,
I mean, if we're working together, you know, there's moderate dosing.
Okay. There has to be a talk at some point to at least try to get them to back off.
Well, I mean, it's just like, here's the cycle. This is what we're going to do.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, but I think for the most part, you know, I think people see, you know, I think if they're abusing, I mean, just that excessive weight you're going to gain. The excessive water and everything like that is just, I think usually the individual can see that something's not right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you had said in the past too, on this topic, and Tren specifically, that you've felt in your experience, guys just end up not being able to get rid of that last bit of fat at times.
No, I mean, I think like, you know, this is all speculative and without going into all this detail, I think that, let's just leave it this, that, you know, on a side note, that there's some people are just not good candidates for Tren. Let's just put it that way.
That makes sense.
You know what I mean? That's all I can say. I mean, for whatever reason, you know, there's speculation, you know, maybe there's an indirect influence on estradiol. There's no studies, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying that I've seen people just, until you drop that shit, then they come in, then they get crisp, you know? And I mean, there are some people who clearly, like, when they're on it, they're just not doing well.
Yeah.
They're not responding. They're not losing. I mean, and don't get me wrong. There's some people who thrive on Tren. Look, it's an extremely powerful drug. I mean, like, shit, there's three times binding affinity compared to testosterone. I mean, it's a non-aromatizing, and it's extremely cosmetically, I mean, it's a very powerful steroid. You know, don't get me wrong. It just seems that some people are just clearly not candidates for it. Some people thrive on it, and some people, like, I've seen, like, you pull out at the end, and then shit comes in.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So there's only speculation as to why. I have some speculations, but, you know, again, there's no studies, whatever, so I don't want to go out there just saying, You know what I mean?
You know, what? I think there's a bigger, there's like a bigger point here too, I think. And this is something I've heard other guys say is, you know, it's all about like feeling good and watching your body and watching what's working. And, you know, because when I started running gear myself, you know, I was reading the message boards and people were saying like, this is a good cycle and this is what you should take. And believe me, I didn't always feel good on what I was taking. And that kind of, there was a reflection too in how my body looked. Just because somebody says, you know, you got to use X amount of this doesn't mean that that's the answer for you. And I think that's kind of what I'm getting out of what you're saying.
You know, it's very true, because keep in mind, I mean, I've seen over the years, like, again, here we go back to the genetics.
Yeah.
You have a genetic predisposition. So steroids, growth hormone, peptides, they cannot enhance what you have genetically. They can only, they can't create what you don't have genetically. Yeah. They can only enhance what you do have genetically. So that being said, I mean, I've seen people on budget cycles, you know, being able to afford almost nothing, sleeping on a friend's couch, getting pro cards. And I've seen people, you know, taking everything, you know, the fanciest GH, the fanciest this, that, and, you know, throw a call out. So, I mean, it's really, the gear, although, I mean, it's obviously, look, it's hugely important, you know, having the right gear, the, you know, everything, the right combinations. But again, I mean, it's really going to, I think it's ultimately going to come down to the person's work ethic.
Yeah.
And success, you know?
Absolutely.
I just, you know, I mean, it doesn't take huge amounts of gear to get the job done. It really doesn't. I mean, there's a diminished point of return, as you're saying, you know what I mean? Renal, hepatic stress, blood, you know, water retention, you know, estradiol level, all this stuff. It's just, more is not better with this gear. You know what I mean? Especially something like Trend. You don't need, I remember, I probably said this on every show, but shit, I remember when I talked to Jordan Yates when he was at the, he was promoting, I'll never forget this, he was promoting his products. This is 1998, he was in Venice.
Okay.
And he's at the Urban Nutrition Store down the street, a very famous nutrition store, you know, supplement store, it's in Venice.
Yeah.
And to this day, you know, there's people do their demos there, you know, RX Muscle, I mean, MedRx and all that stuff, and the different companies and Dymatize, they do demos there. And I remember Dorian came there to push his supplement line, this is 98. And I was like talking to him, and I was like, you know what, like, how much did you take? And he's very, very honest, you know. And I was like, what about Trend? And I remember in his heavy British accent, he's like, oh, I bloody well, I opened up only 376 milligram ampules of Parabol in a week. Okay, 376. So 76 milligrams times three, we're talking about, look, Dorian Yates fucking, remember how fucking crazy, I mean, to me, to this day, he's still the best. I mean, like, I just, I mean,
and
to
I know, me, like, I know, yeah, guys on the state level or less that are using that much in a couple of days, you know, or a day.
Exactly. No, you know it. I mean, like, when I say, like, I hear about people using a gram of, so it just kind of puts things in perspective. I mean, it's like, and you hear, like, I mean, oh God, it's like, I guess it's just it's the mindset, the more is better. If he's doing it, you know, then, but it's just, you know, having, you know, working with people, these guys, what people don't understand is that these guys competing in Olympia, like, you're not, it's not the people are not taking the amounts that people think.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who are low level competitors, people not even competing, who are just taking, I mean, I just can't believe what I'm hearing or seeing. Well, you've heard it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've seen both sides, and I'm sure, you know, like any of the guys that we've talked about today, they're all guys, like you said, they've got that number one thing, and that's genetics, you know, and that's obviously going to be on your side versus.
It's the biggest thing. I mean, I've seen, like, some of the, for example, some of the top, and I won't, you know, who are, let's say, in the off season, let's say they're doing TRT, like after the show, whatever. I mean, look at them on TRT, you know, like, look at them on TRT compared to someone else. It's just, you know, the genetics are going to really dictate your response level, I think, for the drugs. I mean, it's true. I'll give you an example. I mean, this is going a little bit back, but I think this is 92.
Okay.
This is Rennell Jean-Vier. I was training with him. This is in Connecticut. He took second to Sean Ray, the Arnold Classic. Okay. And it was a really close show. I mean, people were arguing, you know, he could have beaten Sean. Here's an example of someone who, he had no money, no budget. I mean, he literally, his cycle was one Zambon ampule of Winstrol every other day.
Okay.
150 milligram Anadrol a day, and he was taking Clen every day.
Okay.
That was his cycle.
Wow.
Growth hormone or the show. That was his cycle for the show.
No kidding.
And just freaky. You know what I mean? Just an example. I know that was back in the '90s, but still, I mean, it just really shows. And just, but the guy's genetics were just insane.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me ask you this then. And I don't think you'll have a definitive answer for it, but it'd be something fun to speculate about that. So you take a guy who's extremely genetic like that, and he obviously can get away with not doing a ton. And then you take the majority of people, myself, and probably a lot of people out there that are listening. Where do we draw the line? Because to an extent, I know I can like push things if I were to really ramp up the gear, and I might even do a little bit better than I would have otherwise. But where do I draw the line to not go into, you know, abuse basically, and still push hard?
Push hard as far as doses?
Yeah, as far as push hard as in get the best effect I can. While still staying healthy, what would be your advice to somebody like that? I mean, are there some upper limits, I guess, that you would suggest to your average guy? Because I feel like
the point of no return limits.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The average guy, I think that you'll get everything you need with, let's say, like, let's talk about tests. You know, I don't ever see a point of exceeding a gram a week of test,
and that's
whether it's beginner or advanced. I just don't see the importance of it.
So you're talking guys even like going to nationals or whatever, that there's no,
yes.
That's okay. Gotcha. I think that's great.
I think that if you have real tests, you know, like, and that's dosed correctly, I just don't see the point of, that's just my opinion, of going over a gram. I just, you know, maybe 1200 milligrams. I just don't see, there's a point of no return. I mean, EQ, I don't see a point of, if it's real and dosed correctly, again, going above 600 milligrams weekly. You know what I mean? If we're talking about, I'm just giving examples, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't see an example. I don't see a reason to go above, you know, 400 milligrams a week of Trinanthate, for example.
And that's, I mean, even,
really just,
and guys could probably get something out of even less, especially the newer guys, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the upper limits.
Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, you've seen a new guy, shit, you put him on a, you know, shot a week of tests, a shot a week of EQ, and they blow up. You mean, like, it's just proving the point. And it really goes back to this, honestly. It goes back to the fucking foods and the training.
Okay.
It really, the genetics, okay, let's look at the tripod of importance, you know, so genetics is, you know, the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And then what's the rest of the tripods, the training and the foods, okay, and then it's the steroids.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Because you see, as you said, Scott, yourself, you see someone competing, you know, in the novice division, you know, and they finish fourth out of fifth in the novice, and they're taking, fuck, you know, every day, like all these, it's just, and I guess, but if the genetics aren't there and not training hard and the food isn't there, they're not, it's just not going to come out the way they think, you know? And I think it really, I think that the foods, I mean, it's just incredible because I've seen, you know, you've seen people will come over and they'll, right away, the drugs are cut down tremendously, but then the foods are implemented correctly. I mean, I would rather push food than drugs, you know, because the foods are really, I mean, you could clearly see, you know, what the foods do. I mean, just clearly, you could see when you change foods, you see reactions of people. I mean, you can see what different foods do. And I think that there's got to be more of an emphasis on, instead of just how much drugs can I push, how about how hard can you push yourself in the gym?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really like, I mean, shut up and squat. I mean, you see these people, like, they're more interested in, you know, the social media, put all that stuff, and like, get in there and fucking train. You know what I mean? There's, I mean, you know, it's great. You see, like, on Geared Up and stuff, these great are doing, these people are doing their submissions and stuff like that. That's great.
Yeah.
That kind of training is what it's all about. You know, you should be squatting till you throw up. I mean, there should be this kind of training, because I got to tell you this. There's some aspects of bodybuilding or modern bodybuilding, there's some aspects that will not change. I mean, you can't undo the fact that progressive weight resistance, you know, it's, some people just live on machines, you know, like, let's say they're back and they go in there and they do back and it's all hammer strength, you know, roll some fucking weight off the ground, do T-bar rows, do barbell rows, do heavy-ass dumbbell rows. These are not comfortable exercises, but these are the ones that are going to cause the stress load on your muscles,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Fucking squat. You know, squat. Go in and squat. Put a bar on your back and squat, you know? Take any wraps out, do the whole thing, or don't use any wraps, whatever, but sit there and do these bread-and-butter exercises.
Yeah.
And be progressive in these bread-and-butter exercises, and actually do them with intensity, with progressive weight, and while maintaining good form. And that's where intensity, you have to muster up a lot of intensity to lift a heavier weight for either more reps or make the weight heavier and get the same reps or have less time in between. There's different variables. There's different ways of skinning a cat.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that you got to go in there and bust your ass, because people, again, they just, oh man, I went from a gram of test to 2 grams. How come I'm not growing? You know what I mean? It's like, well, fucking look how you're training. Look, how are you eating?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some people just wing it with foods. You know,
about your,
and I guess this goes back to the abuse of the eating in the off season, you know, just the pounding of the shitty foods. I mean, you know, sorry to go off, but that's just what I see.
No, that's all right. You're passionate. You're passionate. It's good to hear. So Dave, something else we were talking about before the show, you had mentioned, peak week, and that is a term I think that's kind of been invented in just the last few years. Before that, it was just called the week leading into the show, but now it's like this whole production. Tell me a little bit more of your thoughts on what a peak week should be.
I mean, in a way, there really shouldn't be that much of a peak week. I think that, you know, you can't, if you're not ready a week out, you know, if you're not lean enough, or you're not, you know, dryness comes from a lot of different things. But if you're not there a week out, a lot of this voodoo magic shit, you know, is not going to change things. It's, you know, I think it's funny. I saw one of these memes that said there's like this big, like Asian fat kid or something like that as a picture, and underneath it said, "I'll dry out, bro, when I cut my water." You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can't, like, I mean, the thing is like this. I mean, you should be in such condition where the week out, you should almost be with your feet up whistling Dixie.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes there's good, you know, like there's depletion and loading and stuff like that. But there's some people, like, you know, it's not engraved in stone. For example, you have to do this massive carb loading.
Mm.
I mean, we've all seen everyone's like, you know, mid-range carbs during the week, if there's carbs involved, mid-range carbs, looking, you know, dry, full, crisp, and all of a sudden, okay, well, it's carbing up. Time to carb up.
Yeah.
And then just, okay, got to carb up. And you just start jamming all these fucking carbs down there. You know, you're having these peaks and valleys of spiking, and all of a sudden, you know, you're swelling up with water. You're filmed and all that stuff, and you wrecked it.
Mm. It's too many times.
Too many times. I mean, like, think of it this way, too. And the amount of some of the carb load. I mean, some people, don't get me wrong, some people you can really push and they volume up and they get hard. Again, very individual. But,
yeah.
I mean, think of it this way. Let's say if someone, I'm just giving a number, you know, if someone's, their maintenance deplete, you know, during the leading up to the show, let's say they're at 140 grams of carbs. This is an example.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, like 140, if you 150, if you go to 300, that's doubling your carbs. That's like loading almost. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, your liver can only hold so much hepatic glycogen, and then it becomes muscular, and then all of a sudden you're spilling, you know. So I think that, you know, just sometimes just by, let's say, even just doubling your carbs from your diet, like, you, now you're carbing,
yeah,
you know. Sometimes, I mean, you look back and you say, fuck, we just left everything as is.
Yeah.
You know, it's depending on, let's say, the person's keto. You know, sometimes it's not even about carb loading, it's about fat loading. You know,
have you ever,
some people are,
do you ever do a total fat load that contains no carbs at all? Have you had that happen?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
I'll give you an example. You look at Stan this year.
Yeah.
His conditioning is like, he's made out of cement. That was no carbs at all in that loading. That was all fat loading.
No kidding.
There was no diuretics there either. If you, diuretics are, they're very useful tools at times, don't get me wrong, but a lot of times, like, if someone's really nasty, grainy, hard, and we see them, they take a diuretic, and it's almost like they soften up, you know, almost,
yeah,
like the diuretic becomes counterproductive. A lot of times you can manipulate with water, you know, with water loading, and then pulling back and putting, so it's not always about the diuretic, you know. Again, they can be very useful, but a lot of times they can be, you know, counterproductive.
Yeah, absolutely. So
with this peak week, I mean, the idea is that, like, you make sure you're ready. The week, the last week should be about maybe some minor manipulations, or retaining what you have and just trying to capture that look. You know, it's always you, sometimes you're like, oh, fuck, I wish I went in there the other way, look, you know, week out, or it's, there's something to that. You know, a lot of times it's just, you're there, maintain it, and go up there, put the paint on and go on stage, you know?
I love that idea. I think people get scared because they feel like they, they have to do something. There has to be some sort of change. Hey,
it's peak week, right? Have to deplete, have to load, have to pull out sodium, have to all this. And like, I mean, you know, if it's not fixed on, I mean, a lot of times it's really, you just want to leave it as is. No, don't get me wrong. Some people, they do great. You know, they're depleting and there's loading and there's.
Sure.
I mean, that whole process sometimes is what you want to do with that individual.
Yeah.
You know, but so many times, really, it's just like, again, be ready early. You know, you can't wear weather expressions. You can't dry out fat.
Yeah.
That's another one, you know. You know, or just adding all this junk food at the very end, you know, or like, I think a lot of times, you know, you hear about people, what happens is, like, a lot of times they go to the weigh-ins, let's say, and they panic.
Okay.
You know, they see people and, oh my God, these guys, and they start loading, and they turn themselves into a spilled mess, you know?
Can you fix that now? Is that something you've run into? And then last minute somebody says, you know, hey, Dave, can you help me? I'm competing tomorrow and I look like this.
I try to avoid that situation, you know, because, yeah, I mean, again, there's so many variables. You don't know what, you know, you can't perform magic like that.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I've seen people change dramatically in a couple of days. You know, we've seen it, but I mean, yeah, just this voodoo stuff at the end it can kind of kick you in the ass, you know? You know, introducing foods you haven't eaten during prep just out of nowhere, you know? Like, okay, sugar load, you know, just some people just grab and they start, you know, again, a lot of this has to do with the panic, you know, with the panicking in the last week.
What are your thoughts on sodium with this?
So individual.
Yeah.
So very individual. Some people, sodium stays in, sometimes it's pulled in. That's something that is just very different. I mean, there's basic principles that apply, but again, a lot of that with sodium order and stuff is very individualized.
Let me ask you this then. What are you seeing? Say we have a guy and he's consuming, you know, average amount of sodium. He hasn't pulled it. He's going into the show. He's on his quote unquote peak week. What are some things that you would potentially decide, you know what, we're going to pull sodium out at the end? What would that be based off of seeing?
I guess just what I'm seeing on an hourly basis with the person.
Okay, so it's the changes that you're talking about, not necessarily directly what you're seeing, but the changes between the pictures.
Well, I guess what I'm seeing as a result of the changes.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I guess that's the best way I can describe it. I mean, of course, I mean, it's a chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
You know, the changes will create, you know, what you're doing will create the change, and what you see visually will dictate what you do with the next change, if there's going to be one. And I guess, I mean, it's not answering the question, but it's really just individualized. I mean, hour by hour.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't think I was going to get a direct answer on that because personally, I wouldn't have been able to give you one had you asked me. But I figured I'd try to find out a little bit just because
I mean, like a lot of times, you know, you get. Yeah. You know, you get to the show a couple days out, let's say, and you're in the hotel room with the person a couple weeks out and you're seeing what's going on. A couple days out.
Yeah.
And it's just. From there, taking it from there, you know, we might have a game plan that's laid out, but again, game plan is not engraved in stone.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be adaptative to what's going on at the situation, and I guess that's what it's all about.
You know, about training, how, just out of curiosity, how long are your average workouts?
I think if you're in there for more than an hour, you're doing something wrong.
Okay.
I mean, you should be able to get done in a 45 to 60 minute period, you should be able to get four compound exercises. You should be able to do your thing. I mean, if you're training, let's say chest, and you're doing, you know, a couple sets of cable crossovers and you're doing incline barbell press and then flat dumbbell press. And then, you know, maybe one hammer strength pressing. And then let's say, you know, going to the decline, you know, just whatever, four or five compound exercises, pyramiding, force reps, you know, you should be able to get that done even with a training partner between 45 and 60 minutes.
Okay.
I mean, I think that you have a window of opportunity.
Yeah.
Before, you know, cortisol, you know, just, I think that some people, their duration of workouts is, you know, maybe too long, and they should, you know, intensity is not measured by duration. It's measured by how hard you could smash something, you know, and that's why, to me, I mean, I even love, if you want to take another step, you know, the Dorian Yates concept, you know, the one set to failure, where you do maybe one or two warm-ups. I mean, look, that's the concept right there. So I'm not saying it has to be that low volume.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, there's more than one way of skinning count. You can do more higher volume in a short period of time. You can do, you know, the intense training. Bottom line is, I mean, it's, I don't want to be redundant, but the food, the training intensity is really what's going to make the shit happen.
I know you had mentioned
the same workouts over and over again. If you're not challenging yourself, look, your muscle's very adaptative.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't use different stress loads, your muscles won't change. I don't care how much shit you take, how many drugs you take. It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you see it on, yeah, and Scott, you know, you see it on stage. You'll see some guys at shows, and you'll see they're lacking certain, like, aspects of their legs and back because they're not doing these compound stuff. They're incomplete physiques, you know?
Oh, I you had mentioned Charles Glass earlier. Just kind of out of curiosity, because I've always been fascinated by him, his guys in the gym, are they following workouts that are kind of in that mindset too, around that 45 minute to 1 hour period, or does he do something different?
No, honestly, it's pretty much murder for 45 to an hour, and then it's out of there.
Right. So the key is, I guess what you're telling me is to learn to bring that intensity up. Cause I know that what I've seen, I'd seen it in myself in the past, and I've seen it with a lot of the younger guys that I work with, that it's hard to learn how to bring that intensity up. And a lot of times what they'll end up doing is trying to make up for it by staying in the gym longer and doing more reps and more sets.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What would you suggest to people as far as that goes, like trying to bring intensity up? Because I feel like that's a real tough question to answer. It's something I don't know how to articulate, but one day something just clicked in me, and I learned how to slowly just keep pushing that intensity to the point now where I'm right there with you. I feel like, I want to be able to do an exercise and be able to do everything I need to for that exercise in one set at times.
Exactly. And that should actually be the mindset. I mean, if you are going to, here's the deal. If you know you're going to do, okay, we have an hour and a half to train, 2 hours, you know, you're not going to do all these exercises. Yeah. You're going to pace, you will pace yourself. It's a defense mechanism.
Interesting.
I mean, it's like, I remember, like, you know, Arnold was saying, he goes, he used to set a time limit, like, where if he wasn't done in this by this particular time, I think it was in the Education of Bodybuilder, he goes, you know, he would just make himself leave the gym.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's like, okay, we're going to train from 11 to 12.
Yeah.
You just get it done. So, in other words, so if you want to tax yourself, I mean, you have to, if you want this bad enough, if you want to make improvements, if you're getting ready for a show, if you're just trying to put on, whatever your goal is, I mean, you have to, like, just fucking, you have to channel that, and the intensity should come from your, I mean, I don't know, you should want to rip someone's face off when you train. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, you should want to just go in there and fucking destroy it. I mean, the training intensity should just come because that's just part of it.
I think you make a great point. I mean, setting that time limit, because I know that, you know, you mentioned everybody who's kind of like, you know, doing bodybuilding because it's cool and it's hip and they're posting pictures on Instagram and stuff. You know, if it really comes down to it, I mean, we're there to get the job done and to grow muscle. I think that's a great point of putting that time limit on yourself. Get in there, get it done in whatever period of time you've dictated, and make it happen. Because I think that that's an issue, is you see people that are hanging out and they're kind of like taking too long, and, you know, a 1 minute break turns into a 5 minute break before you know it, they're there all day.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, the texting and all that. And it's like, you know, I mean, as far as, it's so true. The time limit is important. And also, I mean, your mindset, like, if you okay, if it's legs and we're trying to do progressive weight resistance, okay, I'm just throwing out a number. So,
yeah,
you know, last week you squatted 400 pounds, you know, for 10.
Yeah.
So here we go. It's next week. We're under the bar at 405 again. What are we going to do? We're either going to do more reps, or actually we're going to put a quarter on each side and try to get the same reps, try to get the same 10 reps that you did for 405, or we're going to get 405 for 12 or 13 reps. Either way,
yeah,
you're going to have to muster up intensity to get the job done.
Hmm.
So, I mean, the bar's on your back. What are you going to do? You're going to, you have to push harder. So I guess you just kind of like have to make a situation, whether it's the time limit, as you're saying, or just, okay, well, I have to move this way from point A to point B with good form. And I'm going to need more intensity to either add more weight to this and get the same amount of reps that I did the previous week, or I'm going to get more reps out of it with the same weight. But either way, I need to fucking get my inner fucking mojo, you know, and push through it. And I think that's intensity. So finding a way.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, if you barbell row, all these, see, I think a lot of people sometimes they shy away from those uncomfortable compound movements because those movements do require more intensity to do them effectively, right?
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you do a barbell row off the ground, shit, it's a lot harder. You're going to have to push a lot harder. You're going to have to be more intense than, you know, grabbing the low hammer row. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like, you know, the machines are, you know what I mean? Like, but I guess as far as like, I guess I'm old school with these compound exercises, and I love hammer strength and all that. But we're talking about intensity, you know, just, I guess it's really, we're using the compound exercise as an example.
Yeah.
You're going to have to push yourself. If you're squatting, deadlifting, you know, I mean, do incline barbell presses, you know, do flat bench presses, do barbell rows, do T-bar rows, do deadlifts, do military pressing, do upright rows, you know, do these exercises. Cause honestly, I mean, that's what's going to take you. That's, I don't want to use like, so sound so old, but the foundation work, I mean, this is making the clay that you can sculpt. I don't know how else to say it, but I mean, this is what's going to do it, is these bread and butter ones.
No, I think that's great advice, man. Is that still what your guys are doing? The guys that you have that are, you know, on the upper level?
Yes. Yes.
Well, sure. There you go, guys. That's your answer there then.
I mean, like, honestly, if you come down to gold and you see, I mean, there's like lots of people are trying to reinvent the wheel out there. You know, they do this weird fucking cable upper back, you know, and like on paper, I guess it makes sense, but it's just, I don't know. All these little specialty exercises, I guess maybe a variation to throw in once in a while, but not to take the place of the bread and butters.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, man. Well, this has been really cool. I've appreciated your time here, Dave, because it's cool to kind of look inside your head and see what you're thinking as a coach and kind of get some ideas. I hope that this stuff gets through to especially some of the newer guys out there that are listening, because they, you know, we all need help, but especially the newer guys, they need a lot of direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's So, I mean, whatever way we can get, you know, information out on, you know, it's maybe too much blind leading the blind, and just, you know, I think with open communication and, I mean, there's a lot of good information out there, guys. Just, I guess the whole point of this is really, there's certain basic principles that will not change, and it really is, it's the food and nutrition and then the, you know, drugs. I guess that's maybe my whole thing, you know, is pounding these foods and pounding the weights.
So if people wanted to get a hold of you, Dave, where can they reach out to you?
People can message me on Facebook, or they can email me at davekalick@yahoo.com. And I just want to thank you guys very much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have to come up with another reason to have you on. You touched on so many different things. I'm sure that we could probably delve into this for a long time, but I think it's all really important information. So I am sure that the listeners are all appreciative of it. So Dave, I appreciate it. For Advices Radio, this is Scott McNally. We are out.